Hey, welcome to Trapital. I'm your host, Dan Runcie. This is your place to gain insights on the business that shapes music, media, and culture. We dive deep into the companies and moguls who start the trends that shape the rest of the business world. It is quite the moment for generative AI music. Suno, an AI music creation platform, has raised $125 million at a $500 million valuation. Udio, another AI music creation platform, has raised over $10 million. These tools are impressive, but they raise some important questions. What is this data trained on? And will those rights holders be compensated? But is this a standalone company, or is this a feature that fits better elsewhere? And how does this line up with the common trend that we've seen with startups in terms of asking for forgiveness and asking for permission? And also, will this become the Instagram for music, a moment that we keep hearing a lot about? And how will this all play out? To break this all down, I'm joined today by Tati Sirisano from Media Research. We recorded this one in person. We had to. This is a big episode. We had to do it right. So hope you enjoy it. Here it goes. All right. This is a topic you and I have both been thinking about with Suno and Udio, two platforms that allow you to type in a prompt into a text box and music will pop out. Let's talk a little bit about these platforms themselves as technologies. I assume you've played around with both of them. What are your thoughts on what they do well and some things that you're interested to see if will come down the pipeline?
So far, they seem very geared towards consumer. They're platforms that are very easy to use and to just spin up something very quickly and enjoy the novelty of it, more so than something that's geared to a professional creator. Suno is more consumer geared. Udio seems more like a tool for artists. They're pretty easy to use, and you quickly start to think about how specific can I get with this prompt? How can I tailor it more? What can I do to play around with the output and add some more genres or sounds like this?
It's something that people try out in many ways when a lot of new technology has come out in this current era of, oh, wow, that's neat. That's cool. Didn't know that you can do that before. Some of that can extend a bit more broadly to everything that we've seen with Stable Diffusion and OpenAI and all of the tools that they've released even recently with ChatGPT 4.0 and the language translator. Depending on the medium, the use case will definitely need to play its way out. I think the one thing I look for, though, what is the problem that it's solving? Because this is a very cool function, but we're in this phase where a lot of technologies can get lost in the mix of doing things that are really impressive, but they haven't solved pain point or a use case for something.
Right. It can't just be a fun curiosity.
Right. They are vitamins. They're not painkillers. So that's the first thing. The second thing I think about, is this a company that is standing alone, or is this a feature that belongs in a company that is more built to solve a problem around music creation more broadly? Whether it is something that sits in a music creation platform like a Splice or a BandLab, is this something can be created on a DSP? Is this something that can be created by a social network, places that already have that attention? Or is this something that lives in OpenAI, given the resources that they have, being so far ahead of the game in different ways? What does that look like? Is this a feature, or is this a standalone company?
So to the first question about uses, the thing that it is solving the problem is the place that's first disrupted, which I think is the case here, because I would say the actual problems it's solving are things where people need music for various projects and they either can't afford or can't get the attention of the artists and the rights holders or the labels that they need to license music. So production music, the low end of that market, is getting disrupted by Gen AI because it's music for a purpose. Those spaces where the music doesn't necessarily need to be incredible, it just needs to fulfill its role, whether that's background for your unboxing video or if it's for your podcast, if you need some music. And there's more creators than ever that are looking for this kind of thing. Sounds and samples as well is an area that hasn't been disrupted as quickly as production music, but is starting to and probably will be. Being able to create exactly the kind of sample that's in your mind and not have to dig through and find it, which can and probably will impact the actual creative process, and maybe we're not getting as cool samples as we would if we were digging through. But that's another part of the conversation. Right now, we're just talking about solving problems and not what this is doing to art. So yeah, I think it's no coincidence that those are the two spaces that have been most disrupted, because that's where there's actually a need for something like this. And it's not just a cool, fun, shiny thing.
It makes me think of a conversation I had on this podcast a couple months back with Kakul Srivastava, CEO of Splice, and she was talking about some of the AI tools that they developed on the platform. Mm-hmm. And the Splice users told them, hey, the current rollout is making it too easy for us. We're not looking for push turnkey creation. We want something that helps amplify what we do. We don't want you just to create the thing. And I think about that because that's a company that is in the business of helping creators with music creation, not just this particular aspect of creating said thing, push here, type in prompt and create this. So when I hear that, it does make me think, what does the professional creator think about this type of tool specifically? Because it's one thing to build it out in the open when you're looking for a use case. And in the Bloomberg piece that was written about these companies, there was this quote that I go back to where the Suno founder had said, quote, "We've been humbled by our inability to forecast how people are going to want to use the tools," end quote, which is a good way to capture the exploratory nature. You build something really cool. Let's see how the world uses it. There could be multiple use cases, but it also speaks to this exact point of what we're saying.
Yeah, that point about we don't want it to be this easy could also apply to the consumer side of things, where will this be fun to people if they don't actually have enough of the experience of playing with the building blocks themselves? This is a good segue to the other question you had about where should this live. Games are also a really good place for this type of thing. And there's one game in Roblox called Splash that uses AI. They enable you as a player to play with building blocks of songs and play with stems and create songs in that way and then perform them for people. I had a similar conversation about this with Charlie Kaplan at AudioMac. They have an audio mod feature, which is more of a using AI to help remix things that already exist. He was like, are we really just recreating Bop It?
That's funny. I actually didn't think about it in that type of way.
Is this Bop It?
Yeah. I also don't think it's a coincidence that these two that have gotten more of the attention are ones that have also gotten scrutiny, where we've seen several people comment on the issues around copyright infringement. We've seen Ed Newton Rex, now running a nonprofit called Fairly Trained, specifically trying to empower and certify companies that are doing this on a proper basis. He wrote two op-eds in NBW that had talked about both of these tools individually, finding examples of where the potential copyright infringement issues are with this. And it does make me think of this age-old question that we often have with regards to technology and startups and building: is it better for the startup to ask for permission or ask for forgiveness? And asking for forgiveness is something that has been so ingrained in building fast and breaking things. On the flip side, I've also talked to plenty of founders that have tried to get permission building within the music industry. There's a few common things I've heard. One, they say that the incumbents often want far too much control. And they either want to own meaningful stakes, they want board seats, they feel like may slow down a bit of their reach or their power. The second thing, they also feel like they get ignored if they're too small, and they don't feel like they get nearly enough traction.
But they're just not answering your emails because you're too small, or you just can't get their attention.
Right. And how do you balance that in a perfect world? Both of these two things should be able to happen and exist in tandem. But I clearly hear the frustration that both sides have with this.
It often becomes an issue of chicken or the egg. You need the user base to get the attention of the industry to give you the time of day and talk about if it's licensing music. But you might feel like you need the music to get the user base. How does that actually shake out? The other issue is that there isn't enough of an incentive for companies to do things the right way, because if they don't, often someone else will take the route of ask for forgiveness, not permission. And that might be the company that ends up more successful. And some founders just don't want to wait.
Yeah. The incentives being off is a big thing here. Let's look at Andreessen Horowitz. They backed Udio. They also had put out a statement to the U.S. Copyright Office where they were sharing their opinions on the fair use of these things. And they are much more liberal and lenient, where they say regulation that stops the use of copyrighted material, whether it's music, whether it's images, slow down the progress. And they're backing a company that has clearly had some challenges with this. But if you're a startup, you feel like you're a bit of this tug of war, because you're obviously trying to license things from the music, but you also can't just look at a major record label as a partner. You're also looking at them as an investor too. And then you also look at the outcomes here about how this generally works. If your biggest investor is Universal or Sony or Warner, what does the ceiling look like for you? Maybe they may acquire a company for tens of million dollars, but if you get too big, then they obviously don't want to feel like they have to overpay for you. They're probably not going to acquire the company for billions of dollars. But what's Andreessen's goal? They need to have multi-billion dollar exits. And if you're a startup founder and you're trying to chase for the moon, what sounds more attractive? Oh, we sold our company to a major record label for $65 million, or we've been backed by Andreessen. They've led us from every round from pre-seed to Series E, and we're gonna have a $10 billion exit. Not that those things are mutually exclusive, but one of those you're much more incentivized to do, just given the dynamics of being a venture-backed founder. I'm not advocating for either of those positions here. I'm outlaying the reality of what the incentives look like.
Yeah. And also in terms of the incentives, at least in the US, you have the safety net of the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, law that sort of predates social media and that a lot of people think really needs updating from 1998 that you can fall back on as a company if you host content and say, I'm not responsible for the copyright infringement of users on my platform. And in the TNCs of Udio and Suno, both of them lean on that. So if you have this investment offer from Andreessen Horowitz and you have the DMCA and you know these other companies are also vying for the same opportunity as a founder of one of these platforms, I'm not surprised that you might take that ask for forgiveness approach, even though I don't think that's right.
I look at the companies that are doing this the right way, and there's been less buzz about their AI developments.
Exactly.
Even from the major companies, look at Google and their DeepMind project that they have with Lyria. And there just hasn't been as much coming out. And in fact, the founder of Udio is one of the people that worked on that.
And we don't really hear about Lyria. And Google has said we're trying to do the right thing. We're working with the music industry. And that might end up setting them back. And if we look at a lot of the most popular platforms out there today, most of them asked for forgiveness.
I also look at YouTube, and although it seems like a pretty modest pilot, they had announced that AI initiative they had where there were a few artists like John Legend and a few others that offered to have their voices be used in this. I know it's only been a few months, but I haven't heard as much about the developments from there either. And that's YouTube. They have more resources than anyone to be able to help push these types of things. But using and doing things responsibly, unfortunately, I don't know if the timing is related to that. Maybe we'll see things being developed. But again, I echo what you said. I wish there was a better way for all this to happen.
Because I don't want to sound like I'm advocating for platforms to take that path. Just saying I see why this is so difficult on all sides.
Right. And again, we clearly have critical thoughts about the use case of these platforms. If the rush right now is to be the thing that looks like a toy, then that's great. I know that that Chris Dixon line has been repeated several times and has been a thought process for a lot of people that want to build a neat thing. But that thing that looks like a toy eventually needs to have a use case, because use cases are what lead to billion-dollar exits. Toys do not.
We also always talk about how timing is so important for companies, that often it's the launching at the right time that makes you the winner of any given space. And I do feel like the consumer behavior for these products is coming, but I don't think it's there yet. I don't think we're at that peak yet. That's a good point. What's the rush if the consumer behavior is leading that direction, but we're not at this space yet where it is music's Instagram moment? Are we going to end up in a world where people are just essentially generating music and sharing it as often and as easily as they do photos to Instagram? I think that we will get there, but I don't think that's going to happen overnight. I don't think that's going to happen maybe even in the next 5 years. I think about it like 20 years ago, if someone had said, yeah, in the future, there's going to be something called stories and you're going to be uploading a photo like all the time of everything that you're doing and you're going to be adding music to it and you're going to be adding stickers and there's going to be filters. You'd have said, what are you talking about? Why would anybody want to look at a photo that of everything that I'm doing and what I ate for breakfast every day? It's important to always remember that we're still at the very beginning of this. There's a lot of change still to come, but what we've seen as a dominant ongoing trend over the last 10, 15, maybe even 20 years is creation as a form of entertainment and expression separate from making art for art's sake. When I post photos on Instagram, I don't think of myself as a photographer. It could be a similar thing with music. I think that trend is continuing and this is a natural next step for it.
Let's take a break for this week's Chart Metric Stat of the Week. In last week's episode, we did a deep dive on NPR's Tiny Desk. This is a show that gets hundreds of pitches per week, and that's for good reason. It's a platform that can help move the needle for a lot of artists, both established and newer ones. Look at Neo. In April 26th, he did a Tiny Desk performance. That day, he had 35.8 million Spotify monthly listeners, and as of May 13th, he has 36.42 million. We've also seen groups like 311, who had a March 11th performance, and at that date, they had 3 million Spotify monthly listeners, and that number has since jumped to 3.82 million as of May 15th. Those are just two examples, and there are dozens more where that came from. This is a platform that continues to make moves for artists both established and rising in their career. Let's get back to the episode. I look at it in three different steps of how Instagram became what it is. You have, wow, look at what I was able to create. This thing that I created is mine, and this thing that I created is mine, I want to share with the world. One, two, three.
Yeah.
I think Instagram created all of the network effects to make that possible, to make it now this thing where over 2 billion people use on a monthly basis. The thing with these current apps, whether it's Suno, Udio, or 11 Labs, we've definitely hit the first thing in terms of, wow, this is cool. I didn't know that I could type in give me a song that sounds like it came from Andre Harrell, Uptown Records, that sounds like XYZ. And it did that. I don't know yet if we've got to that second piece of it. When I made that prompt, do I feel like this is mine? It's mine in the sense that I typed in this prompt and it came through. But is it unique to me in that same way where my phone took this photo? And then additionally, I want to then share it with my network in that way, for all of the reasons why people upload photos to Instagram on a regular basis.
Like, there's only so many times that a friend can text me like, oh, here's a AI-generated song I made about our breakfast today. Ha, huh? And it's funny.
Like, do you get those texts often?
I do get texts to the group chat that are like that. It's like the novelty.
Are these people that work in music and entertainment?
Yes and no. So I think that there is a bit of a novelty around it right now where people are just doing it for fun. And I get it, because when you hear about these and you see the examples on Twitter, the next step is, oh, that's funny, I want to try that myself. And it's so easy to do it that you do. But I agree with you. I don't think we've gotten to the point where it's this thing that people really want to share or listen to.
Right. It may come. It may just take some time.
Yeah.
It may just take some time. The other thing, Udio and Suno and any of these generative AI media-based tools, being able to prompt well is becoming a skill. It would be good to chat a little bit more about that trend and how that may look specifically in music.
When we do our creator survey, which is an annual thing at Midia, one of the big differentiators between the newest generation of creators and the older is this prioritizing being able to go 0 to 100 with an idea as quickly as possible. If you grow up in today's environment, why would you not be focused on that? Instant gratification and all the barriers to entry are lowering. So if we know that's what the next generation of creators really values, and we have these tools where the prompting is often the most important part, I do wonder if we're heading towards a place where the creators are more of a creative director of a project. But I also think, to your point, people don't want it to be that easy. If you're someone who makes music, it's because you get something out of that process and you love it and you feel this release when you make music. I don't know if you could ever get that if you're not tinkering with all these little pieces, if you're not playing an instrument or doing whatever it is that you do. So I think it remains to be seen, but that is something that we're seeing from new generation of creators, is that they want to just be able to say, oh, I have this idea in my head, I want to hear it now. And that's exactly what these tools are offering them.
Let's dig into that though, because if you press a E key on the piano, then you press an F key on the piano, that's technically an input. You're not doing anything out of the ordinary. But if you learn how to play Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, you've then created that. Is there a world where entering a prompt has that level of skill, where the output ends up being something that is so grand that you needed to master that?
I worry that because these models can only ever create something based on what is in there, what they've been trained on, how far can we go with the creation of new ideas? And I know you could say, oh, but as a human music creator, you only ever have the reference points of the things that already exist. But I do think that it's different. There will be a point where there is more of a skill of knowing how to prompt well, but you can also max out on that, whereas there's no limit to human creativity.
It delves into that art versus science blend of the two of these. You also brought up a question earlier. How does this impact human creation itself? Does it make people look at human creation any differently? Sure, you can create this sound that sounds really interesting, at least the way that it lives today. But when people feel like they're connecting to an actual story, that's hard to disrupt. You look at the most popular music that's come out. It's people talking about other people. We relate to Taylor Swift's Tortured Poets Department because, oh, she's talking about this person from the 1975. And
I'm like, are you a Swiftie, Dan?
Or more recently, Not Like Us by Kendrick Lamar is a catchy song, but people are catching on because it's talking about the most commercially successful, most streamed artist in the history of Spotify. So you still have that gap there.
A counterpoint that comes up often to that is you can create fandom around like a cartoon character or around a Marvel character. It's possible to identify with something that isn't real. Those things are all dreamt up by humans, but it's conceivable that a machine could also dream something like that up and people could identify with it.
That's a good point. One piece I do want to talk about is the companies that are trying to do this the right way and the initiatives to try to make this happen, whether it's the Human Artistry campaign or it's the Fairly Certified program. Companies or organizations that are bringing together the people to say, hey, we want it to be done by respecting and not infringing on the copyright that's owned by these artists and the various rights holders. All of that is great and needed because those are all opinions that I generally agree with as well. I, like you, wonder, does that messaging hit the right audience? And does that messaging also solve its intended use case, which is to hopefully make it a better environment so that the copyright does not get infringed upon?
Are we preaching to the choir with these things, or are the founders that we want to hear this actually hearing this and agreeing with it? And do consumers care? The hope is that also the people using these types of platforms, whether they're creators or consumers, will feel more comfortable using something that has been certified. But I don't know if the average person is thinking about it that hard. There's always going to have to be this balance of protecting copyright owners versus not restraining future creativity. It's such a tricky thing here because I also think that if all of these platforms had to get permission for everything, the models wouldn't actually be good because they wouldn't have as much music in them.
I know we bring up YouTube and its content ID initiative often. We did an episode on YouTube. We've talked around this topic before, but what does that solution look like here? If everyone had to go through agreeing before each individual artist or each individual rights holder ever had their song incorporated in a YouTube video, then that billion-dollar business would not exist. But because they did it in a way where, hey, it's going to be up here and it's going to be up here because the major record labels and the rights holders agreed to some baseline compensation, and what are the key issues you have if there is anything that are controversial or it's involved in content that you may not want to be associated with. It can get taken down immediately. Whether you are a hobbyist creator or you're Drake that's trying to use Tupac's voice for a diss track, the rights holders can come down to say, we're taking that down. So there are examples of that working in place already. And I feel like that's the best way to have something at scale that can actually work in this type of way. Another interesting piece to talk about is TikTok specifically, because Universal and TikTok just ended their 3-month spat of UMG having most of its music off of TikTok. The biggest reason that got air was because of the compensation, but the other major reason was because of the use of generative AI and those tools and those platforms. And I've looked at this two ways. First part looks at how TikTok is looking at the music uploaded to its service and whether that music is always being authorized on Udio or Suno or any of these platforms, having the fair use and the rights holders being compensated for that. Secondly, what are the tools that TikTok is building to be able to do this specifically? That's an interesting play there, because obviously there's the social element. TikTok grew in a large reason because of its attachment and association with music. If you're trying to see how these tools can go from not just being consumption, but also leading to creation and sharing that as well, then it would likely live on a social media platform like that.
Right. It's an opportunity for TikTok to have something where you could create your own music for your post and type in the, which by the way, we hear that the top things that are searched on these short form video platforms when people are searching for music, it's not songs, it's moods. So that's what you're doing when you're using these Gen AI apps, right? You're saying, I want a happy song that da da da. So if creators on these platforms could use something like that, I think the question that scares everyone is, would they use that instead of using commercial music or like music by human artists? For TikTok, because it's not a music platform, it has more of a chance to do that than, say, Spotify. I know UMG has talked about, they've responded to our concerns about this, but ByteDance hasn't really made any indication that they are going to completely stop looking into Gen AI. So I think they have more of a chance at doing something like that as a social first platform. But I don't know if it can ever serve the same purpose as using human music. You need that shared context. It's not just the sound of the music. Even if people are searching for moods over artists and songs, can you have that off of something that you're just quickly spinning up based on a prompt? It's more likely that users on these social platforms will want to modify music that already exists, which is actually already what they're doing, right? So many of the tracks that come up on TikTok these days are modified by the users. So I think there's probably more of an opportunity for that, but would TikTok love to just be able to offer people this Gen AI tool and not have to pay as much for music licenses? Probably.
The point about the modification is key, though. That is what the TikTok user is interested in. I don't see the clamoring for these types of tools for them to upload. I do see the clamoring for them to upload what they already know, but can they speed this part up? Can they remove this? Can they tweak this in? The other piece we haven't talked about is royalty-free music. If you are a podcaster, a creator, you're looking for something for background, you're looking for some type of sound to insert in B-roll, there are tools that currently have businesses based around this. Epidemic Sound is a unicorn, at least back in 2021. I don't know what the valuation would be today, but it was a unicorn at the time. And their business model is, hey, $10 a month, you have access to all the royalty-free music that we have. And there's also platforms like the Beat marketplaces where you can buy a particular song, like for the Trapital podcast. Before all these tools existed, we had bought the music for it that came from BeatStars. But the thing is, though, if you are in that space and you need a song, do you then get it from there? Or do you use one of these tools to get it? Or does this tool also have some type of disruption in functional music? You want study music in the background, you want meditation music in the background, all these tools can do that.
Yeah, that is a space that's getting really quickly disrupted. And it's tough because that is also a place where over the past few years, before this disruption happened, we were seeing it rise as a potential additional income stream for a lot of artists is making production music. But something that we're already starting to see that will only be accelerated by AI music is this forking of the music industry where we don't have everything in the same place anymore. That has been the dominant theme of the streaming era thus far, is that whether you are Taylor Swift or someone making music in your bedroom, you end up on Spotify. Because of the volume of music that's going to be made from these tools, and because a lot of it will be more about the creation as entertainment and expression than actually releasing, we might get to a point where the streaming platforms become more of the places where, if you're a little bit more of a professional or aspiring professional, that's where you end up. And if you are more of a consumer creator or a hobbyist, those things that you're making more on Instagrams and TikToks and YouTubes and these platforms that have more of a UGC element, it will actually create this long-term bifurcation of the industry into these two parallel worlds.
There's actually this report called The Bifurcation Theory by Media Research. I don't know if you've taken
that
a look at it, but I would recommend
summarize.
You.
We have a full report on this if anyone's interested in more. But we've already been seeing building for a while now, because there is this new generation of fans and a new generation of artists as well that are spending more time on social platforms that sort of blur the boundary between consumer and creator, and is starting to become the first step for a lot of artists, instead of the first step being streaming services. And we think basically that AI and Gen AI music and assistive AI music as well will only deepen that sort of forking or that bifurcation. The creator tools space ends up maybe one of the biggest winners of all from all of this. For most of the modern music industry, the creator tools side has been like on the fringes of the traditional music industry. It is becoming closer and closer to the center. The majority of them won't ever try to be professional. It will also open up a new lane of consumer geared products. And all of that is a big benefit to the creator side. A lot of shifts to come, and I'm sure that we'll probably end up doing another episode on this in 6 months, because even more things will have developed.
Right. Yeah, exactly. With the music creation platform specifically, they have the audience. They have the users that want to be able to do this. We'll obviously have more conversations about this, but Tati, this was fun. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks for having me as always.
If you enjoy this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.